So I'd like to thank the organizers for this inspiring workshop. So today I want to tell you something about this partial transpose and the quantities built out of partial transpose and their applications in many body systems and in quantum field theories. Okay. So we can use this operation. It's a kind of quantum information theoretic operations, which I'm going to introduce in a minute. That can be used to detect the various properties of quantum many-body systems. Although initially it was focus was more on entanglement on few-body systems, such as few-qubit systems. But recently, condensed matter physicists and quantum field theorists started to study this quantity, entanglement negativity, which is related to this partial transpose, to learn something about quantum field theories. So I am going to describe that. Another quantity, so entanglement negativity is one quantity which appears in my talk. Another quantity is some sort of topological invariant. So that is some quantity which is quantized and robust against perturbations, which we can use to detect various kinds of topological phases, in particular symmetry protected topological phases. So that's the second quantity of which I'm going to focus. I think after introducing this partial transpose and also entanglement negativity, I will try to describe the application of partial transpose to topological phases of matter. In the second part of my talk, I will focus more on conformal field theories and the entanglement negativity in conformal field theories. In particular, I will try to develop holographic descriptions of entanglement negativity. The first part of my talk is in collaboration with Hassan Shaporian. He's now a postdoc at MIT/Harvard. And Ken Shiozaki, he's in Kyoto. For the second part, it's a collaboration with my current graduate student, Jonah Kudra-Flam, and Yuya Kusuki in Kyoto. Okay. So let's start with the introduction. So first of all, I want to start from something which is perhaps more familiar to you, so that's a partial trace. Okay, so in this setting, we have some Hilbert space, but we have a tensor factorization of the Hilbert space into, say, H sub A and H sub V. And by using partial trace, we can take a trace only for the second Hilbert space B. And for example, we can use that to compute reduced density matrix associated to the Hilbert space B. I want to visualize that in the following way. So I have a density operator. So it's operator, so it takes input, and then there's output. So it spits out some output, it's an operator. With tensor factorization of the Hilbert space, input is split into two parts, and so is the output. So we have also the tensor factorization here too. But when we take a trace, we connect input and output. But when we take a partial trace, we do that only for the second Hilbert space. So I have a connecting input-output here, but without touching the first Hilbert space. And I think this concept should be familiar to you, I think. And then we can, for example, build a quantum entanglement measure, such as the entanglement entropy. So now we talk about partial transpose. So that's similar to partial trace. So we have a tensor factorization of Hilbert spaces into, let's say, HA and HB once again. And then we take a transpose only for the second Hilbert space. So written in the equation, if I use some orthogonal, orthonormal basis, I swap the row of the column, but only for the second Hilbert space. Okay, so here E is some basis. So once again, in picture, so this is my operator, which takes input, and it spits out output. And so transpose, we basically exchange input and output. But for partial transpose, we do that, once again, only for the second Hilbert space. So I exchange input-output here. So that's why this one goes up and this one goes down. So that's the partial transpose of this operator M. Okay, partial transpose for the second Hilbert space. Okay, so why is that useful? So this was... it was noticed that this operation may be useful to say something about quantum entanglement. So let's take some example. So consider the simplest state, EPR pair, and then we have a density matrix, which is written here. So if I take a partial transpose, I exchange row and column, but I do that only for the second qubit. So nothing happens here because it's 0, 1, here it's 0, 1. Nothing happened here neither. But for the last two terms, 1 here goes to 0, 0 goes to here. So we change these last two terms. So this is a partially transposed density matrix. Something interesting happens once you take a partial transpose. It doesn't basically preserve the positivity of the density matrix. So density matrix has to be positive semi-definite to describe some physical state. But what you notice here is that once you take a partial transpose, the eigenvalues of the partially transposed density matrix can have a negative eigenvalue. Okay, so for this specific example, eigenvalue is like 1/2, 1/2, 1/2, but the last eigenvalue is -1/2. Okay, the appearance of minus eigenvalue can be thought of as a diagnostic of quantum entanglement included in the initial state. So if you start with a classical state without any entanglement like this, density matrix in this basis is completely diagonal. So taking partial transpose does nothing to this density matrix. But the idea is that if you have a sufficiently complicated density matrix which has entanglement, taking partial transpose has a lot of effect. Loosely speaking, there's a lot of diagonal terms which are affected by this partial transpose operation, and as a result, we get this minus eigenvalue. So that's a kind of illustration of how partial transpose can be useful to see quantum entanglement. So the example I showed you was for the pure state, just the EPR pair. But in fact, entanglement negativity has been studied in the context of entanglement in mixed state. So the entanglement entropy, or Reni or von Neumann entropy, which I just described before, they are perfect entanglement measure to diagnose quantum entanglement in pure quantum state. But then there's a question, how do we quantify entanglement in mixed state? And as it turns out, entanglement entropy is useful, but it's not sufficient to describe quantum entanglement in mixed state. For example, you can just take completely classical or thermal density matrix, which still give rise to non-zero entanglement entropy. So in von Neumann entropy, once you have a classical correlation, you also capture that. So as opposed to entanglement entropy, the entanglement negativity, which I'm going to write the expression for that, is considered to be more useful to diagnose quantum entanglement in mixed state. Okay, so here's a formal definition of what we call entanglement negativity, but idea is basically what I already described. So you start from your state raw, but then you take the partial transpose for, let's say, Hilbert space B, and then you look at the spectrum, but then you look for negative eigenvalues, which appears after taking partial transpose. So here, this is the eigenvalues of partially transposed density matrix, and we look for negative ones, and then we just take a weighted sum. So that's called the negativity. So if you have more negative eigenvalues, these are indicative of quantum correlations in the original original density matrix. You can also consider this combination, which is called logarithmic entanglement negativity, which is sometimes more useful. I use both. I'm primarily focus on logarithmic ones. Okay, so this is a logarithmic entanglement negativity, and using partially transposed density matrix, it's just a log of the norm of partially transposed density matrix. So that's the definition of logarithmic entanglement negativity. So entanglement negativity is considered to be a good entanglement measure for mixed state, in the sense that it is a monotonic function and the local operation and the classical communication for mixed state, whereas entanglement entropy is not monotone under such operations. Although we cannot really say negativity totally classify and capture mixed state, but this is a very good quantity to diagnose entanglement in mixed state. Okay. So now I want to describe some applications of entanglement negativity in let's say field theories. So once again, I'm primarily interested in two systems, topological theories and conformal field theories. I'm going to do that one by one. I think I'm going to focus on topological quantum field theory first, and then conformal field theory. Okay. So we are here. For topological field theories, we can study entanglement negativity, which has been done in various literature here. But I am going to introduce one more quantity, which is built out of partially transposed density matrix. That is more useful because it gives you some quantized number which label topological phases of matter. Okay. In particular, I will be focusing on symmetry protected topological phases protected by time reversal symmetry. That is because the concept of partial transpose is closely tied with time reversal symmetry, because transpose exchanges input and output, so that can be considered as partial time reversal symmetry acting on some given region. Okay. But why partial transpose can be ever useful to study topological phases of matter? So here's a quick motivation for this. So in topological phases of matter, we are interested in a response of So maybe this is a condensed matter theory way to phrase this, but in topological phases of matter, we are interested in topological response of a system, such as if you have a charge U1 symmetry, you may be interested in the response of, for example, quantum Hall system, where response is quantized and given by Hall conductance. But more broadly, we are interested in a response of system to space-time topology and the various configurations of background field and so on and so forth. What a partial transpose can offer in this context is that it has the ability to change the space-time topology. In particular, it has the ability to change orientation, maybe I shouldn't say orientation of space-time, but starting from some oriented space-time manifold, by using partial transpose operation, you can somehow create a space-time which are not orientable. Okay, so unorientable space-time manifold can be useful to detect topological phases of matter protected by orientation reversing symmetry, such as time reversal symmetry or parity symmetry, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that's the kind of motivation behind the construction of a topological invariant, which I'm going to present just now. Okay, so let's take some example. Like I said, partial transpose can be useful because you can manipulate space-time topology, but how does it really work? So I want to give some example. So I will start with one-dimensional phases with a gap, and it has a some topological character. So it's considered 1+1-dimensional symmetry protected topological phases, and it can be anything of your interest. For example, it can be the Haldane spin chain, which is the a topological phase realized in spin systems protected by time reversal symmetry. Or we can also talk about one-dimensional topological superconductor, and the representative model is called the Kitaev model or Kitaev chain. Okay, anyway, we just take a one-dimensional system living on a chain or line, okay, and they have a gapped ground state. So that is the situation. And there is also time reversal symmetry. And how do we detect a potential topological properties of such system? So here's the kind of topological invariant which I propose here. So we first take the some interval I, which is the part of the total system, and then I consider reduced density matrix by taking partial trace. Okay. But then once I have a reduced density matrix for this interval I divide this I into two intervals, adjacent intervals. It can be disjoint, but for now I focus on the adjacent interval. And then I take a partial transpose for one of these intervals, okay? So then we get the partially transposed reduced density matrix for region I, okay? So lengths of these intervals, they do not really matter because I'm interested in topological phases of matter with a very large gap. And so the length scale associated to this interval has to be sufficiently short with compared to the length scale set by the gap. But otherwise, it's totally arbitrary. Length does not matter because we are talking about topological systems. But anyway, once we form a partially transposed density matrix, I propose to study this quantity, which is a trace of rho, which is the original density matrix, times partially transposed density matrix. The claim is that phase of this quantity is topological invariant. So this is somewhat similar to entanglement negativity, where you take a trace norm of partially transposed density matrix. Here, in topological invariant, the difference is that we somehow mix a original density matrix and partially transposed density matrix. Okay. So this is my candidate topological invariant, which we may be able to use to describe topological phases in one dimensions. But then I want to tell you what does this invariant compute. Okay. And so what we want to do is as advertised before, to interpret this object in space-time path integral picture, and then the space-time turns out to be a unoriented ones. And for me, to develop path integral picture can be done conveniently by using this matrix product state notation or descriptions, which was introduced in this workshop before. But I think details doesn't really matter here, so you can just think of this as a discrete space-time with many points, many special points. In time direction, I only have 2 points, which may be, that's the nature of matrix product state, but it doesn't really matter because we are studying, you know, topological phases, so you know you don't need many points. Okay, so I have a 2 points in time direction, I have many points in space, and for example, regular partition function can be constructed by starting from this wave function and then just contract indices, and this is the partition function. But if you don't take the contraction for all these bonds, so if you keep some bonds alive without taking a contraction, then what you get instead is a reduced density matrix. Okay, so that's the first step, but you can also take a transpose. If you take a transpose, basically you just exchange input bonds and output bonds. So if you take a transpose, you kind of flip these sites in the input Hilbert space and the sites on the output Hilbert. So now we twist these regions, and you can also do it partially. So that's how we take a partial transpose graphically in the matrix product notation. So in the end, so here you can ignore this unitary U, which presents sometimes, but it doesn't for the simplest case. So let's just ignore U. So then a topological invariant can be obtained by contracting this density matrix and the partially transposed density matrix, which looks complicated. But eventually you can convince yourself that this discrete path integral is equivalent to this space, which is a two-dimensional real projective plane. So that's maybe a little bit complicated, but eventually we can convince ourselves that this discrete network is equivalent to this unoriented spacetime, which is a real projective plane. So what partial transpose does in the end is to introduce this cross-gap region in the spacetime manifold. Okay, with that, I want to now present some concrete calculations which we did. So one example we looked at was this Kitaev chain, which is a one-dimensional, it's a model which realizes one-dimensional topological superconductor. And once again, we put this topological superconductor system on a one-dimensional chain, get a ground state, and then compute this topological invariant. So this is a result of some simple numerics where we looked at this quantity z, and in particular the phase of this z, and it turns out to be perfectly quantized in the unit of 2 pi over 8 when you are having topological superconductor. Okay. It completely agrees with known topological quantum field theory prediction, which says partition function of topological superconductor on RP2 is given by this invariant, which is called Brown invariant, but it's basically ace root of unity. So that's what we are really seeing here in this numerics. So we kind of successfully designed topological invariant using partial transpose to reproduce a topological quantum field theory prediction. Okay. So here, since it's a fermionic system, we have to specify pin structure, and it is part of our definition. We defined partial transpose properly for fermionic system. So in the previous introduction, I just introduced the partial transpose operation for bosonic systems, where we just exchange law and quorum. For fermionic systems, you have to keep track of some signs, because when you are exchanging fermions, there may be some minus signs. But once you properly do that, you can get the space-time manifold with proper pin structure. And that's why we are basically, we have agreement with topological quantum field theory prediction. Okay, so we can also do similar calculations in higher dimensions. But for that purpose, it's actually simpler to just use spatial operations. So let me briefly describe that. So in 3+1 dimension, we have a similar situation. I have some gapped system in three-dimensional space, and then which can be topological, okay? But in this case, I just take some region D, let's say just a ball, And then I consider a partial inversion or partial parity operation within this ball. So in the equation, it is this operation where I have a ground state psi, but I act with an inversion operation only within this region D. Okay. Somewhat similarly to the 1D example, this quantity interpreted in the path integral picture is the path integral on a real projective plane, 4D real projective plane, which is useful because we can use this path integral to detect 3 plus 1 dimensional topological superconductor. Okay. So a good example is actually a very, very well-known system. It's a helium-3b. So if you know the phase diagram of helium, it's here. In terms of Bogoliubov-Duchenne Hamiltonian, it's a simple quadratic Hamiltonian with momentum-dependent pairing. This turns out to be a good example of 3D topological superconductor. And once again, we just took this expression z, which is in terms of partial inversion. And then once again, we see the perfect quantization of the topological phase of this quantity z. So now in this dimension, it's quantized to be the 16th root of unity. So it's here. Here it's one unit of topological invariant. In other phase, we may have a two unit of topological charge. So it's a 2 pi divided by 8, and so on and so forth. But this once again, this demonstrates that by using partial transformation, we can effectively create unoriented space-time path integral that can detect topological properties of topological superconductor, let's say. Okay. So they all work fine, but I also want to present some analytical calculations. And then we can basically use bulk boundary correspondence to compute topological invariant analytically. So that's how we link to the theme of this workshop. So what can we do? So what we first notice is that we rely on partial transformations, partial transpose, or partial parity transformations. And they all act on the given region of the space, let's say D. Okay. So then what we really need is a reduced density matrix for the region, from the given region D. So that this type of quantity, starting from the ground state, I'm interested in reduced density matrix. And so this can be written in terms of entanglement Hamiltonian, like this, or this is definition of the entanglement Hamiltonian. First thing we want to know is how does this look like starting from the ground state of topological system? To make a analytical progress, we make assumption that this entanglement Hamiltonian is essentially given by a physical Hamiltonian of some topological system. Once you physically terminate your system by putting some boundaries, okay? Once we make these assumptions, as it turns out, we can make a lot of progress. For example, for a 3D topological superconductor, where B phase of helium, which I just introduced, this boundary Hamiltonian is just a free fermion Hamiltonian. So by taking a free fermion Hamiltonian on the boundary, we just go ahead and evaluate this topological invariant. So with this assumption, it's just given by a trace of exponential of the surface Hamiltonian, so trace is taken now only on the surface of the system and on the entangling surface. Now, then we have this partial transpose which act within the Hilbert space of the boundary system. Okay? And once we do that, we get this very nice formula, which is kind of interesting. So, the phase part of this quantity is as we have seen in the numerics, it's quantized, and it's, we cannot maybe say it's quantized, but you get this phase we expect. It's a 16th root of unity, 2 pi divided 16. So it agrees, we basically reproduce the numerics. There's also some other real part, or sorry, the amplitude part of this partition function is also interesting, and it picks up some term which does not depend on the regulate and so on and so forth. And there are some other non-universal terms, but we can basically compute this quantity once we make this assumption, okay? So that's something we did. So then we are very happy to reproduce our numerics. There's also some more interesting story. So once after we put our paper on archive, people also arrive at the same conclusion, but from somewhat different perspective. So once, as I said, computing topological invariant this way, we are making this assumption where entanglement Hamiltonian is basically the physical Hamiltonian of your boundary, but for three plus one dimensional topological phases, boundary can be gapped and topologically ordered. Whereas in my computation, I just do the free series. But you can just take alternative surface terminations, which is topologically ordered, and then you can just follow similar computation. But now this computation can be done just using 2+1 dimensional topological phases. And then using topological phases, we can basically reproduce this formula. So both computations agree, okay. Yeah, this computation, I would say, more interesting, but free theory we did also agrees with this result. Okay, so I have like 10 minutes left, I think. Any questions so far? So just showing how it works for, how it is useful for topological systems. But if there's no question, I want to move on to now more on the entanglement side. So now I want to discuss entanglement negativity in holographic conformal field series. First of all, entanglement negativity has been studied in the context of two-dimensional conformal field series. For example, it's initiated by this paper, Cardi, Carvazzi-Cardi and Tony, and they wrote a series of papers. And this is the result of computation, entanglement negativity computation for a given. So in these computations, we start from the ground state, and we trace out some part of the system, leaving two adjacent intervals behind, and then we take the partial transpose for the one of the intervals. So then you get this prediction, which we also verified by numerics. But anyway, this has been done, and the entanglement negativity in two-dimensional conformal field theory has been studied. But now I want to study entanglement negativity in the context of holographic duality. So that's something we started in this paper, and we are still working on this. So I want to tell you something about this. So basic proposal we have here is the following. So entanglement negativity is basically given by something we call the cross-section, minimal cross-sectional area of this entanglement wedge, and possibly with back reactions. Okay, so that's our basic proposal. And I want to demonstrate how it works. So first of all, just to remind you what the entanglement wedge, so that's basically the bulk region which corresponds to the radius density matrix in the boundary region. So if I have a boundary here, and if I'm interested in interval here and here, then you draw a minimal surfaces like this, and then this shaded region is called entanglement wedge. And you can also draw a picture with the black hole inside. So that's another picture here. So then the proposal here is to take the minimal cross-section of this entanglement wedge. So maybe it's very difficult to see, but I have a dotted line here, which is the cross-section, minimal cross-section of the entanglement wedge. And this cross-section separates this part of the interval and the other part. If you have a black hole, you basically avoid horizon, and they have a dotted line here and dotted line here. Okay. So this is, so our proposal is basically, if we want to compute the negativity between A and this region, another region A let's say A bar, you just take the compute the cross-sectional area of this entanglement wedge. Interestingly, this entanglement wedge cross-sections has been discussed extensively in the literature recently, and there are a lot of other quantities which are kind of proposed to be dual to this cross-sections. So the one is the entanglement of purifications, and the other quantities odd entropy and the refracted entropies, and they are all somehow very closely related to the entanglement wedge cross section. And our proposal is to add another; it's a different quantity, entanglement negativity. Okay. So how do we arrive at this conclusion? So first thing we did was to take the tensor network model of holography. So that's sometimes called happy code or quantum error correcting code model of holography. Or there's some other models, but let's say we took this quantum error correcting code to describe holographic duality. So I don't think I have a time to go into details of this computation, but basically we take this tensor network model and compute it entanglement negativity, and it can be done conveniently using the language of a quantum error correcting code, because that's what perfect tensor network model realizes. So we computed entanglement negativity by separating this tensor network into two regions, okay? So then we get basically this formula, which is literally in terms of these two parts, where the first part is a Rémy one-half entanglement entropy for this resource state in the language of quantum error correcting code. And then there's the entanglement negativity for the bulk density matrix. Okay. And just for comparison, if you just compute entanglement entropy, you have a similar structure where entanglement entropy in the holographic tensor network consists of two terms. So this is the entropy part coming from the resource of this state. And then that's something associated to the bulk density matrix. And this part reproduces the minimal surface area, basically. The next step is to put the black hole, because negativity is a useful quantity for mixed state. So we wanted to study mixed state. So to consider mixed state, we can put the black hole. But then if you do that for the entropy, basically it is like removing bonds. So then this part contributes to the entanglement entropy. For the case of entanglement entropy. But for the entanglement negativity, the bulk part is a entanglement negativity of the bulk density matrix. So then putting black hole basically does not have extra contribution to the boundary entanglement and negativity of the boundary theory. So what we are seeing, in summary, what we are seeing here in this formula is that once you have a black hole, geometrical object tends to avoid the horizon. It should be like this because, as I have said in the introduction, entanglement negativity does not count classical correlations. It counts only the quantum correlations. And in this central network picture is basically consistent with this, so it avoids horizon. But then it is really like this entanglement wedge cross-section in the presence of black hole. Okay, so in the last 4 minutes, I want to now tell you something about a full-fledged holographic story, but only for ADS3/CFT2 context. So the main issue here is that we are having a Rémy entropy here. So this is a Rémy entropy with Rémy index 1/2 of the resource state, which is expected because for the pure state, entanglement negativity should coincide with entanglement, sorry, Rényi entropy one half. But Rényi entropy is known to be suffered from the back reactions, as studied by many authors. So we expect, you know, it seems like we are having this nice geometric picture, which is literally true if I make the spectrum of this state to be completely flat. We can tune in the tensor network model, we can tune such that we don't have a back reaction. But here, in the full-fledged ADS3 CFD2, we should expect back reaction. So main question is how well do we know about this back reaction? Okay, but anyway, that's the main issue. But I just want to show you one calculation. Okay, so I basically just compare entanglement wedge cross section and some computation from the conformal field series, and they basically agree. So the configurations we took was to take this one-dimensional system, and then I consider two intervals here with length L1 and another interval with length L2, which is separated by this distance d, and then I trace out everywhere else. But then I take a partial transpose for, let's say, the second interval. Okay, this is the setup of my interest, and based on what I'm presenting, we expect that it is given by the entanglement wedge cross section, which is in this case given by here. So this is the bulk direction. I draw minimal surfaces, but then I took a look at this cross section. So this cross section, depending on the cross ratio, it can be either given by this or it's zero. Zero because minimal surface area can be completely disconnected. Okay. On CFD side, there's the formula, twist operator formalism for the entanglement negativity. So we are supposed to compute this four-point function in terms of this twist operators, and we take some reciprocal limit. Okay, but then the claim is that entanglement wedge cross-section and this negativity should be equal with, well, it should be equal up to this proportionality constant, which we determined by taking adjacent limit. But anyway, this is the proposed formula, and we want to check this formula now, okay? In the large C conformal field theory. So here's, you know, we take these 4-point functions, and we want to compute the conformal block in the large C limit. And maybe this is almost the last slide. So here's a comparison. So yellow curve is the cross section of the entanglement wedge. Okay, like I said, there's a jump. Okay, and the blue curve is the computation of this conformal block using Zamarodchikov recursion formula up to some very high order, and then they perfectly agrees. And they, of course, this region of the cross ratio, we have to switch to the different channel, but they basically completely agree, okay? This is the very strong evidence that this formula is really correct as is, okay? And this effect, proportionality factor 3 over 2, basically takes care of all effects coming from back reactions. So at least in this configuration, we are really having and this correspondence, entanglement negativity is given by the entanglement wedge cross-section. Okay, so here's some more technical thing which I skipped. So then we checked various other configurations, and we also see agreement so far. We can also make this claim even stronger by matching our negativity computation to, diffracted entropy computation, which is expected to be dual to entanglement wedge cross-section exactly. And there's a lot more open questions, like, I don't know, how higher dimensions, quantum corrections, and the time dependence, and so on and so forth. But we are still trying to understand possible correspondence between negativity and entanglement wedge cross-section. So with that, I want to finish my talk. Thank you for your attention.
Question.
Uh,
About the time dependence, do you have any intuition of how the entanglement negativity will behave on their quenches? For example, preparing the initial state in a boundary conformal state and time evolving it?
Yeah, so we have looked at this in the various situations, and the so in rational conformal field theories, for example, you can develop so-called quasi-particle pictures, and you can basically describe how entanglement negative deface by using this quasi-particle picture. You can also take the universal limit, where you can just use the universal CFT result to describe it. Yeah.
Another question.
In the slide on the tensor network calculation, you seem to mention something about black hole state. Can you expand on that? What exactly is the black hole?
This one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we can first make this just computation for a generic setup, but you know, I think there are two motivations. You know, we want to put the black hole because we want to get the mixed state, but we also want to check if it is ever related to entanglement. But so you want to make a tensor, a black hole in the tensor network. And the one way to do it is just to remove some tensors here. Maybe I should say bones, but you remove some bulk tensors, and then that's behaves as a black hole. And then you can, but formula is still the same because even with this, it's still the error correcting code. But then you can just look at what kind of contributions you get once you remove some tensors, okay? So for the case of entanglement entropy, removing tensors give rise to contributions here. So that's why you started to see volume or contributions. So it's a sum of contributions, but so this term and this term behave somewhat similarly, but this term and this term behave very differently because it's a negativity of the bulk density matrix, which is not capture any thermal effect. So let's say it's just a zero, and then in the minimal surface area picture, minimal surface area, you don't really get, you don't get any contribution from here, so you just count tensors you're cutting here and here, but nothing happens in the black hole. So that's similar. That is basically entanglement which behavior.
Another question? I have one. So do you understand how to modify this proposal if one of the regions is not connected, if you had, say, a couple of intervals, three intervals?
Yeah, so that's right. So that's sort of related to my open question. So there's some good configuration we can just basically, we basically expect if the configurations are symmetric, like a spherical, we maybe still use this prescription. When you have asymmetric setup where, let's say, some of the region is much smaller, but smaller, and this region is smaller, then it's not symmetric. Then we expect something, we have to perhaps take a back reaction effect in a more complicated way, but that's we don't know yet how to do that.
I see.
Yeah.
But there are no more questions. But before I ask you to thank Shinsei, let me remind you I have somebody's charger up front for a Dell laptop, so come see me. But now let's thank Shinsei again. We'll see you all again at the 10 o'clock.